This is an Enterprise Times Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Brittany O'Shea, who's a senior manager at Veracode.
Hi, Ian, and thank you for having me on the show today. I'm really excited to share my experience from working in the application security space for the past 2 years and applying that cross-functionally from my experience doing network security. I'm really excited to share the perspective on open source risk.
We've had this big push on open source for the best part of 15, 20 years now. So much so it's now accepted in the enterprise. But one of the fallacies with open source is that it's secure because so many people have looked at it. You've got a whole bunch of lessons you were talking about on stage earlier. Do you want to give us an idea of some of the things that you found?
Yeah, I find it really interesting when people make the assumption that open source is secure, given that it's mainly developers contributing to open source software. And we know when we take a step back and we look at the own pitfalls we've had in our proprietary code for years, is that there are a lack of education for developers in the space. When we look across the training that they're provided, almost none of them have any information or context provided about how to code securely or what security vulnerabilities they might be introducing. While open source has been a great way for them to innovate from a code perspective, we've still propagated the same security risks that we have seen in proprietary code for many years. And if anything, we find them more to have security vulnerabilities because there's no single source of ownership or expectation as to who should fix security-related defects or let alone who should find them. And that makes it really complicated to actually track the security risk in these open source components.
One of the things that interested me from your presentation earlier was you showed how open source projects run by individuals had declined in terms of the amount of open source you saw in the enterprise, where we've seen big players come in and they've created enterprise versions of an open source project. Should that not give customers more belief, more trust that there's a valid security process sitting there?
Interesting when you think about enterprises contributing to the open source space and the idea that this would make more secure software. I think it's when we look at in turn to your own organization, your own security posture can give you great visibility into where that might have pitfalls. Still, these developers, even in the most advanced organizations, don't have the training to prevent vulnerabilities. So while we see, as their training increases, mindset shifting towards actually fixing vulnerabilities or items such as that, it still faces the same problems as a hobby developer would have when contributing to the open source community. Another factor in that is while enterprises might actually start an open source project, often these are taken down by your organization and it's used in combination with your first party code, and you will, together as you compile your application, create vulnerable software across your first party and open source libraries.
So what do you say to people when they say to you, but open source, lots of people have looked at this code, they've examined it, I can see this list of things on GitHub that tell me 50 people have examined the code, it must be secure. Why is it not secure?
When you look at a medical reference to compare this, let's say you tore a ligament. Hundreds of doctors could do an x-ray and say, everything looks good, no broken bones, but you're not actually testing for the torn ligament. You need an MRI. And so if you put that into context of security, the developers there are not necessarily seeking out security flaws. They're looking for quality issues. They're looking for scaling issues. They're not doing the right tests primarily to find security-related defects. And then once they have found security-related defects, they often don't have the knowledge or the resources to know how they might go ahead and do more secure coding practices. The question becomes is, despite having more eyes on it, are they actually checking for security? And often the answer is no. Even if they're checking for security, is that their first priority? And how are they trading off managing the tech debt of security-related defects that can often live on through generations of versioning controls because their prioritization is to bring innovation to market faster, not necessarily fix security flaws because oftentimes they don't understand the ease of compromise or how important those risks are when leveraging them.
How much is that education, though, for the open source owner, the person who's dealing with the contributors, the person who's looking after this and curating this code? Do we as an industry need to put more effort into helping these people understand their responsibilities? Because clearly it has to sit with somebody.
when we look at the moderator's role within the open source community, they can be a great first line of defense as to prioritizing and asking for resources to the community and invigorating them to help actually make secure code within that component more important. And I think it goes to, we've done a lot of training, traditional video, film, or click-through compliance, but we haven't really, as an industry, engaged developers or those moderators at an interest level that makes sense to them through scoring how we look at the quality or the popularity of that on a security level and making that more public and visible, so it's something that they, as a moderator, will take pride on, increasing that score, and also through providing them visual demonstrations of how their library could be broken so easily. And it's starting to really engage their pride on why security matters and educating them in that way.
One of the things I've been starting to see within the open source community is some of these libraries are getting very, very large. There doesn't seem to be any deprecation of old code. There doesn't seem to be any removal of things that nobody's used for a very long time. How do we get that level of practice and knowledge into the community? Because if this was a commercial company, we'd expect that to be happening.
Safe to say the developers and the moderators within the open source community are not immune to the tech debt challenges that we face, and that comes not just from poor practices and how you might write a function, but also through security tech debt that you maintain over time. It's one important for us to understand when we're providing pragmatic approaches to understand how libraries are coming together. And often, while that surface level code that's contributing or the main purpose of the library might be solid in its integrity, it's often on average pulling in 180 other libraries or dependencies that aren't actually owned by that core moderator. So it's helping the organization or the moderator to understand how many indirect libraries are associated with different versioning, and how do we look at the span of control when you're pulling in 1,000 libraries? Does that become under your remit to address that tech debt? How do you prioritize that? Most of these libraries, they've become very sophisticated in how they think about it, and they treat it almost like we would in the product industry treat a product that we're launching to market. They have sophisticated roadmaps. They have asked from the community. So how do we continue to give feedback so that they also prioritize fixing that tech debt within their roadmap as well? And so I think it goes back to the education.
When developers then go out there from our enterprise and they say, look, there's some open source code we can use here. It's going to speed up what we're doing. It saves us reinventing the wheel. How often do they look at the history of that open source project? How often do they look at the number of libraries that are second or third tier that are being pulled in order to understand the risk to the business that they are creating?
Not often. They are checking the things that are most important to them. Is this going to meet my business purpose? Is this going to help me accelerate my pace of innovation? Is this code structured in a way that I'm not going to have to go back and clean up over time because it won't scale or function to meet our business needs? It's expanding their mindset on what's important, and then also incorporating testing in such a way that they can get that feedback in an automated fashion. It shouldn't necessarily be on the developer to spend hundreds of hours to understand what might be happening in the dotted line section within the README file that might trigger something that they should say, maybe I shouldn't use this, or maybe this wouldn't be a good fit. It should be us using technology and using our ability to data mine these open source repositories to collect all that information and then be able to provide them instant feedback so they have clear yes or no decisions. So when they're pulling something down, they have testing as that automated process, and that's giving them a good check off the bat, rather than it being solely the onus on them to do that through manual research.
But how do we get accurate testing of this and accurate remediation? We can scan code, but you've just pulled in this open source library into our company, and you're using one function from that library, but that library references, as you just suggested, hundreds of other libraries. Now, testing software says there's a problem here. Something doesn't work. But I now need to work out what doesn't work. Is that a real problem with that one function that I'm using? Is it a problem with the library that I think I'm using? Is it a problem with those downstream libraries? Do I really need to care because I'm not touching it? How do we match that testing to what the developer's intent was and the reality of the risk?
When we pull from the open source community or the software composition analysis community pulls from are neighbors in the static analysis testing. What static analysis has gotten really good at is creating call graphs of the application and understanding how that application might function in runtime to reduce the concept of false positives. We can do the same in open source, and we can detect how that library is actually interacting in the concept of an application, if that's what your organization is looking to develop, and start to reduce the numbers of false positives by enabling your developers to prioritize based on exploitability. So understanding what they exactly are using, how that's interacting with your proprietary code that you're putting to make this unique to your business, and then prioritizing based on that.
One of the things you talked about in your presentation was doing better at our bill of materials for our code. One of the problems of being an old developer is I can remember when we didn't care. And if I'm honest, I look around a lot of developers today and they wouldn't have a clue about their bill of materials. They don't have accurate manifests. And even if they did, just because there was a fault in a library, they don't know how to trace across their entire organization to see how many times that library touches pieces of code and what they have to remediate. What has to change from both a culture and a tooling perspective to make this work?
My first thought as you were asking that question is it's not just old developers who need to worry about it. I mean, the reality is I don't sit awake at night worrying about vulnerabilities that occurred 10 years ago or that are living within legacy applications. I'm worried about how do we as an industry keep up with the pace of open source development. If there is on GitHub 3 commits happening every second, and we're trying to address that with human researchers saying, this looks interesting. There might be a vulnerability here, and they're chasing that. We can see how quickly false negatives or the gaps can actually happen in these bill of materials. So I say, one, we as an industry need to use technology to solve our problem, to understand the fact that open source is open. We can use machine learning and data mining to actually call these repositories and find out what's the most accurate picture of security based on the triggers that developers are providing us, like documenting when they've made a security-related fix, and us being able to use that intelligence to make sure we don't have false negatives within our modern applications that we're building or releasing multiple times a day in most cases. And then on the second hand of that, when you look at organizations, most of them are on some level of a journey between their monolithic applications that maybe they don't even have the source code for. They have no idea what's in there. And then their new applications that are being shipped so quickly, they also have no idea what's in there. Common theme is nobody knows what's happening. So I think it's prioritizing first by baselining your testing. We said earlier, we've been scanning a lot and we can scan often. It's something we're good at. Let's use that to our advantage. Let's make sure we scan everything, get a good baseline. And then instead of continuing down the mentality of scanning for assurance and continuing to scan for visibility, proactively taking a step back and being able to put a strategy around, okay, I have this legacy application. I understand that I've done a combination of static analysis and software composition analysis, and I found this bill of material within this application. But I understand that I'm retiring that within a year. So I'm not going to prioritize fixing that tech debt. I'm going to work on phasing it out. Versus a modern microservice architecture, you might want a structure of how can I actually begin to give feedback from the first line of code onto what are the security vulnerabilities a developer is introducing so they're never introduced. So depending on the type of code you're working with, some of it is getting that bill of material and lay of the land. But with the rate of the development, I think we as an industry actually need to be providing the developers the tools to actually prevent vulnerabilities from ever entering their code.
One of the common themes, certainly from the last 3-4 years, as Agile has taken over, has been shift left. When we think about developers bringing open source into the business, should our shift left start with the moment that open source library arrives? Because we kind of think about the code we write. But if this is going to be part of our base toolset, should we not be shifting that far left? Perhaps we should be talking to the open source community and providing them with the tools so that they can actually do some pre-test and provide us with a level of assurance over that library.
It's a combination. As long as we take the approach that someone else will fix it, we'll be in our current state where we are now, where we have a relatively poor security posture for most applications the first time they're tested or looked at, and for most applications in the wild. The approach of educating within the open source community, but understanding that they are not ultimately responsible for the security of that code. So you as an organization need to protect yourself. And the way that you can do that and reduce the cost to do that is through enabling your employees or your development teams to make smart choices about the code they're using. And this comes from as they're coding themselves or adding code onto an open source library, or as they're choosing an open source library. So I do believe that before you're even choosing open source libraries, you should be doing a security test to understand what's the security risk. And now it's important to say that sometimes we take too of a risk-averse approach. So if we find a vulnerability, we're going to say, hey, we're not going to use that. And that can slow down innovation. Where I see organizations thriving is when we really get tight on what's our risk appetite and how do we begin to apply that to the choices we make related to software. Understanding, hey, this might be a open source repository, but I'm not going to use that function, so that's okay. And my testing throughout the life cycle is giving me that assurance. Quick early visibility, but then assurance throughout the testing life cycle as your application comes together, that's providing in context guidance, is helping you to do that. And then also having the ability to have testing tools offer you smart intelligence about different versions or items such as that can keep you up to date and also resolve those security vulnerabilities as well.
How do we build risk appetite into this? If I think about compliance, I can now build rules into my software tooling that actually checks for various compliance issues. There are no tools that at the moment allow me to say that's a severe, moderate or a possible error, therefore I can fit it into a risk appetite grid. Is this something we need to see in the next generation of tools coming along? Because if we're going to leave it to people to make that decision on risk appetite, rather than have a risk appetite policy that we can codify, we're still going to be having this conversation in 5 years' time.
I think it'll be unique. Risk appetite is interesting because I think it's unique for every organization. It's also unique for every application and its business purpose. We tend to say no risk, but if we looked at ourselves honestly, we would take a step back and say, okay, we're starting in this level of security debt or in this level of items, and we would take best practices that we see in other areas of life of how do we begin to raise the bar down and improve our risk posture over time. Part of that comes from using machine learning within your analytics and things like that to help you proactively manage your risk and see areas at which you could make small tweaks to actually really reduce your overall risk exposure. And that will help you create your risk posture. But then I also think it's leveraging the expertise within our peer communities, which open source has shown us has done so well. There's a lot of folks that are tackling the conversation of what does a good risk appetite look like and how can we pull that information and knowledge together to begin wherever you're on your journey to understand what good looks like and benchmark against your peers and use analytics in less than, oh, I've scanned 5 times, that's wonderful, and more in a proactive way where you can really dig down to the individual developer level to say, hey, I've noticed that, as you said, I had this one library, it's propagating across my 300 apps more than 70 times. If I fix this, I'm reducing my risk exposure by X%. So it's having intel like that I think it's really helpful when we think about editing our risk posture.
But that speaks to a massive change in maturity, a massive change in mentality and culture across the industry. Is there really that drive for that level of change at this moment in time, or are we at the start of changing those?
When we look at customers who have implemented security in such a way that it has empowered developers to take ownership of their code and take ownership of the security of the code, we're seeing those dramatic changes take place organically. From seeing those results of seeing organizations who had been longtime customers struggling to have any meaningful movement on vulnerability reduction, skyrocketing year after year, and then implementing testing earlier in the life cycle and doing some out-of-the-box trainings, like actually having their developers hack their own applications or items like that, we see that organic change take place. So I don't think we're that far out of it. But I do think we as an industry are still focused too much on finding and not fixing. And that's where our next questions for maturity, I think, have to go to, is that scanning in general is becoming pretty commoditized. There's different levels of scanning that will provide you better and more accurate results that will help you better address your risk. You should always be considering is what resources am I getting from this tool or solution to remediate that vulnerability, and looking for smart information included that helps empower your developers. Is it providing ways for them to automate their workflow? Is it providing them ways for them to understand, is this going to break my application? Instead of scanning just being really built for that security assurance use case, starting to build the use case of scans for the developers. And I think you'll organically see that shift in the industry. And I think we're starting to see it in the last year, but we still have a long way to go.
Of course, we focused here on the developers, not on the security teams. One of the issues with changing culture is it has to be an inclusive change. It cannot just be piecemeal, department by department. Because if we do that, we segregate, we separate, and actually we drive wedges between people, and immediately the culture goes back to where it was before because nobody wants to be the outsider. When do we start to see best practice start to emerge? When do we start to see the training courses, not just for developers, but also for security teams, change to encompass open source and the risks that it can introduce?
We have just made an announcement about a technology called Veracode Labs that is actually targeted towards developers and security professionals. It's one of the first of its kinds that's actually allowing developers and someone with relatively limited coding experience, which might be your security team, to actually hack applications. And what we've seen across training or across our experience providing more than 3,000 customers with best practice on how to scale this is a great way to build team camaraderie is to compete as a team. So to actually pull in teams across your organization and start to gamify it for whatever is important to your company culture. So we had one organization we worked with, they had printed developers' faces up on a wall. That was their way of giving kudos for other related things within their organization. And they made that cross-functional across their security team and development team and started putting their faces up for just security-related purposes. And I think they had some kind of cash prize or something associated with it. The first way to build a team is to make sure you're playing as a team and to break down those barriers and make sure that you are participating in the things you're asking and you are an available resource to them. And you're allowing them to have a seat in the table about why the tools or solutions you're picking aren't working for them. And digging in beyond the initial complaint point, because oftentimes we'll hear things like speed or accuracy, or this doesn't fit right within my testing. So digging in, if that's the symptom, what's the real problem? What are the different technical solutions you can get creative with on how you fix that?
I'm a CISO. I've sat in a room, I've listened to your talk, and I walk up to you at the end and I say, Brittany, I've got a problem. What are the four things I need to do to fix it?
So if I'm thinking about from a CISO's perspective, what are the four things you need to do to fix your open source problem today? Is first, scan it, but make sure you're scanning it with a technology that's based on the most relevant information. So it's scaling beyond using either security research or broken disclosure processes. The second thing is understanding what's important to your developers. So making sure that you're incorporating technology that scales through auto remediation and that scales through prioritizing fixes based on exploitability and through breakability of your application. So that instead of coming in and saying, we're going to address all these flaws today and all our technology won't work, you have realistic goals and filters and things that you can filter on. Number three, I recommend that you start to train your developers on actually the risk of just software in general and engage them in a way that makes sense to them. They are natural born problem solvers. They love the work they do. They take a lot of pride in the work they do. So start sharing the metrics that you have and start giving them opportunities to learn in hands-on environments. And then lastly, once you've gotten that up and running on a small scale, on a larger scale, use the data that you have to really sharpen how you're thinking about making your strategic decisions and how you're thinking about resolving risks. Looking not only at here's all the red and here's the violation, but what's the why? Where is it coming from? How can I address this more strategically? Are there certain development teams that are struggling with this more than others? And what are the resources that I can bring to them to help them improve their risk over time?
Brittany, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you.